And now I'd like to begin our program for today by introducing fellow Rotarian Richie Burke, who's the founder and president of Go Get It Marketing and the host of the Go Getters podcast. Richie, take it away.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And everyone, thanks for joining us today. Look forward to seeing you all virtually. Recently, I've done a number of Go-Getters podcasts highlighting several community leaders at once over Zoom. And when Mary and I thought of doing this program, we thought it would be a great idea to do a similar concept highlighting six Rotarian business owners from our club, all from very diverse lines of business, check in with them regarding how they've been affected by COVID, since we've all been affected in one way or another from a business standpoint, what they're doing to adapt and if those things are part of their permanent strategy moving forward. And then what are the main lessons and silver linings that some of these business owners see? So we've got a great panel here for you today. It's going to move quick since we have six people on. So we're going to do about 4 minutes each, and then that there's going to be plenty of time for Q&A, which Mary will assist me with. And if you have any questions that are overarching for the panel or for a specific panelist, just leave them in the chat and we'll be good to go. So on the panel today, in order, we've got Jim Berry, president of the Berry Group, Todd Bentley, president of Bentley World Packaging, Mark Cannenberg, president of RBP Chemical Technology, Darren Miller, president of JM Construction, Michael Shepard, managing director of Ironwood Drive Financial Group, and Julie Tolan, the executive vice president and owner of Lauber Business Partners. Thank you guys for joining us today. And we are going to start with Jim Berry, president of the Berry Group, independently owned and operated commercial real estate brokerage, coming up on 100 years serving the Milwaukee area. So Jim, would love to hear from you on how COVID has impacted your business today and how you guys are coping with things right now.
I think it's, it's impacted us in the way that it's impacted most people. We have seen a downturn in activity. We've seen a lot of uncertainty. We've seen a lot of our clients put things on hold for now. But that being said, we still have seen some continued activity in closing transactions and listing new properties. It's difficult to get people out to see buildings in this environment or to make decisions, but we are seeing some of that, and particularly in certain areas. I think, as you may suspect, in the retail and in the hospitality and the restaurant area, things are very dire. And that is a huge challenge. But in the industrial area, which is mainly what we do, most of the businesses are deemed essential. Their operations are continuing. They may not be as strong as they were. There still is a lot of uncertainty, but we do see activity continuing. We just sold a building last week to an industrial company that's growing. We're selling one this coming week, and we have some other pending transactions. So it's kind of a mixed bag, but I think that once there's more certainty in the economy and in the political situation, we will know, we'll have a greater idea of where things are going forward.
And Jim, have you had to make any structural changes with your firm or anything, or change anything regarding how you guys go about business, or has it just been scaling back the operation a little and, you know, planning the best you can and waiting things to return to a level of normality?
I wouldn't say there's anything structurally different, except that we are working more remotely, but that's kind of the nature of our business in a way, is that we are out showing buildings and talking to clients. So that's not much different. Our office staff is working remotely part of the time, but I think we, we're reassessing where things are moving in terms of the real estate market going forward. And I definitely think that the industrial market is one that's going to benefit from this this crisis, and some other areas of real estate are going to be very challenged going forward.
Is there any main lessons that you've learned going through this process? The company's, 100 years old, almost multi-generational, and obviously you've never experienced anything like this. Do you think there will be any changes moving forward?
Well, again, I think that we're looking at the movement in the real estate market, probably away from office use. As you can see, we're all now, I am in my office, but I think other people are not. And there's a lot of talk about how both office use, retail use, if you're like us, you know, most of our retail use over the past month at home has been delivery. And except for things like groceries and even that. So I think you're seeing a movement within the real estate market towards more of a warehouse industrial use. And I think that that area, that sector is going to benefit. I think that some other sectors are going to be very challenged. But the other thing you have to always look at is how you diversify not only your business, but in the properties that we own, how you diversify that. And I think you look at companies that have done that successfully, like Steve Chevalier's company, Zilber, and those are the companies that are going to be able to weather through something like this, whereas those that put all their eggs in one basket may be more challenged.
Yeah, I agree with that. Well, thank you for joining us today. We'll move over to Todd Bentley now. He was the president of Bentley World Packaging, family owned for six generations since 1848. I was doing a little research. I think it's one of the 100 longest family owned businesses that's still operating in the country. They specialize in export and domestic packaging, military packaging, wood crates, green packaging, warehousing, distribution, custom packaging, engineering. A lot going on, Todd, for you guys. I'm curious to see how things have really affected your business. You do so much, obviously, shipping with supply chain and everything else.
Right. Yeah, this is definitely not the first real challenge we've faced as a business in the history of the company, but I would I'd go out on a limb and say it was the most sudden. Basically overnight in terms of looking at our business. Fortunately, we are an essential business, and the vast majority of our customers are essential businesses. Going into this COVID-19 shutdown, everybody had full order books. And the concern really went from how do we add the people to get the work done that's out there to really how do we keep our people safe and how do we keep the people we have today so that hopefully when things recover and when we come out of this on the other end, we have the people and we have the horsepower, the good employees to get done what we need to do. So, we've seen a pretty significant impact in our business, not initially, but every day that goes by, we have essential businesses who are working through their order books and there's not much new that's been added in the last month. So, they're working through what they have and there's very little in the pipeline to replace that. And the longer this goes on, I think the more of an impact we're going to see from that. One thing that's really, and Jim mentioned on it a little bit earlier, is a lot of the larger opportunities have really slowed down. There's a confidence factor. The way business had really occurred in the past, people like to see, hear, touch things. And when it comes to a lot of these industries, those portions of the business development or the closing cycle have really been put on hold.
That makes sense. And Todd, how much business do you guys do internationally? Are you mostly domestic?
We do a fair amount of business that's going internationally. So we have seen impacts, Peru, South Africa, other countries really shutting down all imported items, which impacts our customers and U.S. manufacturers trying to ship abroad. But I think that long-term impact on that global supply chain, what changes are going to come out of this, is really something to be determined.
Yeah, and I was just curious, we've only been in this for 6-7 weeks. Now it feels like a lot longer ago when all this hit, but it as you said, it was very sudden. Did you guys see this coming just because the international business that you did on, things are like that over in China or over in Italy, Europe, that this was going to be a reality in the U.S.? Or did you kind of get hit out of nowhere here like a lot of us did.
I would say that the size and the scale of the response has definitely surprised us. We saw some small impacts from customers who were maybe doing final assembly in China and specifically in that Wuhan area. So we had maybe one or two customers impacted maybe in that mid-December to mid-January timeframe, but nothing like we're seeing today.
Yeah, and Todd, before we move on to Mark, any silver linings that you see in this from a business standpoint or any main lesson that you've learned?
Yeah, I would say the couple lessons learned, really the importance of communication and scenario planning. The stock market doesn't like surprises. Business owners don't like surprises, and employees don't like surprises either. So we work really hard to know what our responses were going to be, both to the disease and, you know, from a business and a financial aspect. And it's something we've really been communicating to employees, to customers, you know, throughout the whole process. So that's really been my biggest lesson learned. And the silver lining, if there is one, is really it's allowed us to focus on a lot of the areas that, you know, when you're really busy, you don't get a chance to look at it in terms of, you know, really what kind of materials we're presenting to customers, you know, cleaning up some of our internal processes, value stream mapping activities that when you're busy, you just don't really have a chance to always get to. So if there's a silver lining, it's really been the time to focus on aspects of the business that hopefully as we come out of this and business improves, puts us in a much better position to operate really well and really efficiently for both our employees and our customers.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on. We're going to move to Mark Cannenberg, president of RPB Chemical Technology, which is a world-class supplier of proprietary chemicals and delivery devices for the printing, electronics, and medical implant industries. Mark, how's it going?
So far, so good, Richie.
So, interested to learn a little bit more about your business and how everything's been affected.
Well, we consider ourselves experts in surface chemistry. That's what we do, and that's the underlying technology in all the three markets that we serve. So the electronics and medical industries have been designated as essential, and business hasn't really changed much there. They're kind of long lead time industries, and their order books go out months and months, and so not a whole lot has changed. The printing industry, which is the industry that our company was founded on back in 1954, has gone through some pretty dramatic changes over the last 10 years, and it's actually accelerating now. The newspaper industry, which we serve, we have probably about 1,000 newspaper customers, and that includes everyone from the New York Times and Washington Post and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel to the little weekly newspaper in Arkansas. But that has been in decline, of course, because everybody's getting their news digitally now. I think this COVID-19 is going to be, you know, kind of the end of the line for a lot of them. So there's not, that's not too bright. On the other hand, they are printing almost every day. They do print every day. So there's a continuing need for the products that we offer. The commercial printing industry is kind of a mixed bag. I was talking to one of our key customers yesterday, who supplies, inserts for Macy's. Now Macy's has closed their stores, and so they moved a lot of their business to the internet. But they therefore they don't really need print right now. So everything that was on the books for them to be printed has been taken off the books. So pretty tough for them.
Yeah, and how is that kind of impacted how you guys are making decisions right now? And did you initially pivot your business when you saw the decline of printing going on and then moving into those medical and electronics industries that were more growing? And is it just shifting the opportunities in your business over in those directions now even more so?
Absolutely. You know, we could see this coming a long time ago. Through organic growth or acquisition, we positioned ourselves in the electronics and the medical industries. Both of them are growing industries and highly technical. So it takes advantage of our skills, in serving those. So we've got the privilege of being part of the supply chain of companies like Lockheed Martin and defense, Stryker and Medtronic in medical, and the companies that supply Cisco and IBM and all that sort of thing. So we've got a very solid position there. Unfortunately the printing thing is happening a little faster than we'd like it to. But, we're able to kind of offset the decline there with growth in the other industries.
Is it, what's it been like as a business owner making those shifts?
Well, we learned a long time ago that we compete. We're a small company. We have 35 employees here in North America and another 5 in our subsidiary in India. But we compete with Dow and DuPont and huge companies like that. And the only way we can win is by being faster and more agile and maybe a little bit smarter in terms of, how much we bite off. Those are the kinds of things that we've been doing. That's what's enabled us to get to where we are today. And I guess this has been sort of a validation of our business model. We put our employees first always. And secondly, we have really good communications up and down the supply chain with our vendors, our customers, and our customers. So agility and communication is key, and fortunately, we did recognize that prior to this event, and it's serving us in pretty good stead.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to move over to Darren Miller, president of JM Construction, boutique construction management firm specializing in urban construction for the last 28 years. Darren, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, Richie. Thank you.
So how, what's it been like for you guys these past couple months?
Yeah, construction, as you said, our firm is a boutique firm. We're small, we're nimble. My office, I often joke, is got 4 wheels on it. So in many respects, working on the road and from home is nothing new for me and my partner. Construction is about 50% of what we do on the management side. I would say, as an example, one of our clients, Erin Hills Golf Course, we had a project underway for them. And as we all know, their staff is at home working remotely, which has allowed us to do 2 things. One, we can space out the trades on site so that they can work in a safe way, right? And distance themselves. Additionally, it allows us, we've also been able to keep that project on task because we're not working around the staff that's on site. So in that way, it's been a blessing 2 ways. They've actually added scope of work to what we're doing on projects that they just can't always fit in their short window of off season. We also do a fair amount of owner's representation work. And so that's allowed us to kind of explore opportunities with other development partners, putting together pro formas for future construction projects. So in many ways, those are things that, we continue to plug away at and try to help our clients at this time, not necessarily with construction, but with understanding how their projects can potentially get off the ground in the future.
Yeah, and you touched on a project like Erin Hills, which has ended up being a good thing for you guys. And have there, on the flip side of that, have you had several deals stall or any projects stall just because you can't operate or companies aren't willing to go through with things now like they would have been a couple months ago?
Yeah, we haven't seen that to date. By and large, because most of our projects are small. In the construction industry, I know a lot of my peers have seen larger projects stall or go on hold. I mean, we maintain very close relationships with a lot of architecture firms in town. And in speaking with our architect partners, a lot of projects that were under development, construction drawings and whatnot have those have continued to proceed as they were. Projects that were in design development, their larger customers are taking a pause and saying, all right, let's evaluate what happens over the next 3 to 4 months prior to, you know, driving forward on a large project. So again, on the construction side, our boutique size, again, more of our projects are of that small scale, and we have not seen at least the projects underway get paused in any meaningful way.
Yeah. Has this changed the way that you look at business at all moving forward?
Absolutely. I mean, I lived through 2008, 2009. In fact, my favorite story from that time period, I had a branch bank under construction for a large Wisconsin bank, and they said, hey, you should get a line of credit with us. And so I said, sure, I gave them the appropriate documentation. And they said, hold on, we're not loaning money to construction companies right now. And I said, even though this contract to build your branch bank isn't collateral enough, so again, I've been able to, understand, again, we're small, we're nimble, that helps us stay in a position where we don't have a large organization to feed.
Great. Well, thanks for coming on. We are going to move over to Michael Shepherd, managing partner and founder of Ironwood Drive Financial Group, which he just founded last year in 2019 after a successful career in the financial services industry at NM and Principal Financial Group. Shep, good to see you.
Good to see you too.
So could you just briefly go over what you guys specialize in at Ironwood? And I'm interested in talking to you with the market being so volatile right now and diving into how you're assessing things and what advice that you're giving to your clients right now.
Yeah, thank you, Richie, and thank you to all the other panelists. Great words. I would like to start and say thank you to everyone in healthcare, as well as our first responders for saving lives and keeping us safe. And then I'd also like to send thoughts and prayers to the Anderson family. Unfortunately, if you haven't heard, Milwaukee lost a great human being today, and Mike Anderson from Channel 12. He was a friend and mentor of mine, and I know his family is hurting, so I want to make sure and send thoughts and prayers to that family. As it relates to our business, we do retirement plans for businesses and financial planning for individuals. We do small to middle market companies, we'll say 5 to 50 million in retirement plan assets, and we lead with education, communication, and reflect the market when we do so.
And how, obviously the market's volatile right now, it's gone down. Has that changed the portfolios of your clients at all, or the way that you guys are looking at things or operating?
I think, first, the markets have been volatile, and a lot of people have experienced some financial pain. When we set up planning for our clients, we talk about the good and we talk about the bad. It's less about how good you want to do and more about does your planning fit what you want to accomplish in your short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals. So for us, it's more going back to the plan and saying your goal was to do X and here's where we are on that plan. And if we need to make adjustments based off of your specific situation, then we make those adjustments. One thing I will say that has been extremely important is two things. One is knowing how to declare what a win is. So the closer you get to retirement, you want to be a lot more conservative so that you experience less of the volatility that you have now. And then two, there's been this, because we've had 10 years of good years in the market, there's been this thing of all of your money needs to be invested and all of your money needs to be well. And we have returned to an emergency fund is just as important as the return on your investment accounts. And so those that have taken some money off of the table are feeling really good about their plan. And I think it's a resurgence of the importance of safe money as opposed to solely having a lot of money at risk.
Mm-hmm. And Shep, I want to end on this with you. You're very active in the community. The community's obviously been hit in a number of ways, but do you see any silver lining for our city moving forward after going through this?
Yeah, I think this is a time where we all need to invest in our relationships. We all need to make sure that we connect in some ways with people that are important, and that we all come together in some form to move forward. This is a crisis that impacts us all, and it impacts some a lot more than others. And so I would ask for myself and for everyone to just have empathy for people who are experiencing things in a different way. There are a lot of people who right now are out of work, and there are a lot of people who are concerned about the long-term impacts of this. And so it's important that we just all do our best to come together, especially as employees and employers, that we communicate with the people that are looking for us in leadership. I can tell you, Richie, I did not ask for the worst financial crisis in history to happen in a year of starting a business. But that just means that we all need to come together, and we'll all get through this together.
Absolutely. Good message. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's your host Richie Burke, and I am sure that you're looking to have a big year in 2020. You also know that people are busy, it's a cluttered market, and it can be tough to stand out and engage your employees, customers, and target audience. Over the last year, we've been very lucky to do a lot of great work for brands like Komatsu, Thrivent Financial, Trek Bicycle, Colliers International, First Federal Bank, Marquette, as well as a number of small to mid-sized local businesses, really helping them grow and communicate better through our work like podcasting, video production, web design, and marketing automation. So if you're looking to have a big year in 2020 and you're interested in seeing how we can potentially help you, just shoot me an email, richie@ggmm.io, richie@ggmm.io, or just visit our website, ggmm.io. We have a simple form you can fill out on the site. And thanks again for tuning into the Go Getters podcast. We really appreciate your support. We'll go over to Julie Tolan from Lauer Business Partners, a firm that helps small and mid-sized companies and organizations achieve their goals by providing professional expertise in finance and accounting, HR, executive search, and nonprofit management. They do this through fractional leadership, interim leadership, and consulting. Julie, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Richie.
Julie, very interested in talking to you as a small business owner myself, and just knowing a lot of small business owners that have been hit and affected by this. I'm curious to hear what's going on at your company and then what you're advising a lot of your clients at this point in time.
Yeah. So we feel really fortunate that at this point, by and large, Lauber is holding up better than we expected because we had no idea what to expect.
Right.
One of the great gifts in this experience for us right now is we acquired the firm 3 years ago, and it, at that time, had a single service line in finance and accounting. We have diversified over the last 3 years to support HR. Executive search had also been a function of the firm for many years, but we've added executive coaching and growth planning in addition to nonprofit management. So the diversification of our service lines is serving us well right now. That, along with finance and accounting having been such a critical part of our history and our reputation, is pretty essential to businesses. Our business profile, our client profile, our businesses, roughly from $5 to $75 million in revenue, and I would say the sweet spot is between $10 and $30 million in revenue. Many of them are manufacturing companies. We served a remarkably important service for them in the application of the PPP loans and other support that was available. We became kind of expert overnight in that and fed the information as quickly as we can in digestible ways out to the team. We have 35 financial business partners who work with our clients and about another 10 in the HR space. So those two areas, HR and finance, because they are so critical in times of growth and change, and this is certainly a time of change, we've been really fortunate to maintain those relationships. The most interesting thing from our perspective right now is the, and Chep hit on this, the critical role of communication. And it's doing it in a relevant and authentic way and not simply selling and trying to position yourself as something important right now, because people can't hear it. So learning how to communicate in a way that is really effective, authentic, and reaching out to the relationships that you have, I think is a real silver lining in all of this for us.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I want to go back to the PPP loan, since that's been all over the news this week. I'm sure you guys were just slammed the last couple of weeks. Everyone I talked to in finance and banking was trying to process as many of those things as possible. What was your reaction to that? As a small business owner, it's a huge deal if you get that and you get 2 months of payroll forgiven. It can make a big impact. And then obviously the government, the pool went dry quicker than expected, and it seemed like a race to the clock towards the end, and now it may or may not get refunded. Do you have any insight or just a reaction to how all of that played out?
No, you know, we as a firm applied for our own PPP, and we're successful in that. The key to this, clearly, and in retrospect now we understand, it was about speed, and we were fortunate to be fast in that regard and to get our team lined up to support our clients well. And we found that the community banks were in a better position to act quickly. You know, I hope that there will be additional support coming, because, you know, so many businesses, and then there's the whole nonprofit sector that we support as well, that is really, really traumatized right now. And buying some time, which is how we feel the PPP support, really what that's for, is buying us time while we try to get a better handle on what the next several months and potentially longer will be.
Yeah. And any main lessons that you'd like to close out on as far as what you've learned from this, or what you've kind of learned helping smaller businesses navigate this whole pandemic?
It's certainly the communication point and touching base consistently, reaching out to clients and seeing how they're doing, reaching out to referral sources and other partners to genuinely care about how they're doing through this and share what we can. The other thing that I think for us as a firm, a big part of our value proposition is the fact that all of our colleagues have at least 25 years of experience in their expertise, and we work on site. There are a number of firms that offer similar services but do that remotely. This has been a real challenge for us because we really feel strongly that earning the trust of a business owner is fundamental to how we do our work. And so we are working through this as we look forward, and we still believe in the foundational role of trusted relationships in business and think that that will prevail. But it certainly has challenged us all to think a little bit differently than we have.
Absolutely. Thank you for coming on. On that note, I'd like to thank Jim, Todd, Mark, Darren, Shep, and Julie for joining us today, and Mary for having me. And I think we have a good 15 minutes left for questions and interaction.
Richie, I just sent a couple of questions to you in the chat. Do you see those? Or there's a few more popping up.
Yep. Okay. I got it.
Got it. Okay.
That's a good question. I think from Teresa Reagan, if you knew 6 months ago that we would be in the current situation, what would you have done to prepare? Does anyone want to take this one? Dive in, Julie.
If you had told us 6 months ago this was going to happen, and expressly here is what's going to happen, I don't think any of us would have believed it. I mean, it's not like anything else that we've ever seen, certainly in terms of a downturn. And the rapid rate is like nothing we've ever seen. So I'm not answering it with a specific, you know, the human condition is resistant to things that they can't imagine. And I don't think I don't know how, other than in our business, perhaps in the healthcare business, but you know, that isn't a very agile business. So I just really don't know how, because I think we all would have been in denial and in dismissive of just what this is. And it's not even fully revealed itself yet, which is another point. But I think we are working really hard to try to figure out going forward, that's for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree that if you told me that 6 months ago, I wouldn't have believed it either. I would say the silver lining, at least from our standpoint too, is being able to diversify more and move more things online. Like, we're going to start doing some online training and coaching and stuff like that, and some courses on podcasting, which we probably would have put off completely. And I think just making sure we're better diversified for anything that happens again. Does anyone else want to weigh in on that question, or we can keep moving? All right, we will move on to the next one. Justin Gill, hot topic right now. Should the governor lift this ban and let us all get back to work using precautions?
I'll answer that. I think yes. I think we have to have a plan in place to remove this. And I think that one of the concerning things is that we have a process in this state which involves not only the governor, but it should involve the state legislature. It should involve the impact of business. And I think that the governor has been, unfortunately, too unilateral and too, driven by his own agenda on this. This is a time where he should be reaching out to everyone and putting together a plan that is tailored to our state. You've bred a lot of uncertainty by putting this arbitrary date way out at the end of May. It's the longest term in the entire United States, beyond New York. And I just think that has created a lot of terrible uncertainty. I have a lot of friends in the restaurant industry, in the hospitality industry, and they have no idea what's going to happen. And his plan yesterday was extraordinarily vague in terms of timing. And we're all business people. We know that we need to have plans in place. So I'm advocating some sort of a gradual common sense return to normalcy that has, respect for the medical and the health situation. But we need to work on that collaboratively and not have top-down orders coming out of the executive mansion. That's not the right way to handle this.
Does anyone else want to weigh in on that?
I'd just like to add to that, if you can hear me, that Wisconsin's a very large state, and there are counties within the state that have one or two cases, and it's hard to treat the entire state the same way. You've got southeastern Wisconsin, you've got Dane County, you've got pockets that may need to be treated differently, but I'm not sure if necessarily the right approach is to treat every county the same, as opposed to really having more localized plans to reflect what the actual situations are in those communities.
Anyone else? All right, we have a question. Is the Rotary Club of Milwaukee, this is for Julie, is the Rotary Club of Milwaukee eligible for the PPP? This could be an overarching question, if organizations are eligible, and what advice would you have for them or other organizations to apply?
Julie, this is Mary, and I think I probably could jump right in on that one.
Right.
Okay, the Rotary Club of Milwaukee is a C4 organization. So there are many types of 501 organizations, but we are a C4, which is a social welfare organization, as it's called, and that would be similar to like Kiwanis or Lions Club or Optimists. I'll talk a little bit more about that, but the PPP funding was only available to 501c3s, which is how you typically think of a not-for-profit, or a 501c19, which is a veterans organization. So a couple of you know that I had a little campaign going a couple of weeks trying to get the C4s included in the next round of funding, and I'm happy to share a letter that I wrote with any of you. I think that's unlikely. One of the things that I learned is that a lot of the C4s also have what we think of as dark money. So there's a lot of political action groups that are C4s. So that's one of the reasons I've been told that it's probably not likely to happen. But that, just to have some clarity, we are not a 501c3. So that kicked us out from the start.
There are different, Mary's exactly right, of course. And there are other 501 organizations. As she said, there's only two that qualify, but there are other programs, loan programs to which nonprofits that are not C3s or C19s do qualify. And I'm happy to respond to specific questions offline to give you more information if an organization you represent is something you're interested in.
Sounds good. We can move forward then. Bill Sheehan, who I missed seeing at the marketing committee meetings, asked me how's the crisis impacted the go-getters. I would say from a business standpoint, as far as our marketing agency that does work for other clients, we've been hit a little. I feel lucky that a lot of what we do is online, but we've had some deals with larger companies stall, some in-person podcast shoots and projects get postponed, and some other things. I feel fortunate that some of our clients are essential businesses and have even more work now, which has increased in certain areas. But we've gotten hit a little as a business. From a podcast perspective, it's been a unique opportunity. Never would have done something like this before. And this is about the fourth time that we're doing something like this. So it's an opportunity to get more people from the community on the show and involved. Whereas before we were just doing a couple episodes in person, and our downloads are up. Most podcast downloads are down, but I think we've done a good job of creating relevant content during COVID-19. And if you guys do have a business, I think just putting your own, as far as content creation, just putting your own twist on this and understanding that your customers or your listeners, they have different routines, different habits, different needs during this time, and your value still is to add value and make their lives better. So we've adjusted the way we've gone about things, but it's overall been a good thing for the show at this point. Looking for any other questions. This is a good one.
What are the 1 to 2 ways analysts are reimagining their future that is different from their current trajectory?
I'll take that. So one of the things that we do with our retirement plans is we do on-site education at least twice a year. And for some of our retirement plans, we do it 4 times a year. So we'll go to anywhere in the state. We have some clients that are out of state. And we have been unable to do that now. But typically, time-wise, that would take us 35 business days to go see all 20 locations of one of our largest clients. We, through Zoom, decided to do an offer right at the beginning of this. Would you like to have a virtual education meeting where we can touch everyone? So in the worst week that we had during this, we saw 600 people live via Zoom and then did 23 one-on-one education meetings, which I think both those businesses and those people found extremely valuable. Because during those times, there were a lot of questions, there was a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of people just wanted to know, am I okay? What should I do? Should I come completely out the market? Should I take my money out? And it was important for them to hear a voice, and a voice that, like was mentioned, had empathy in it and saying, I hear you, let's make sure that we make sound decisions that are more in the long-term future. So for us, we will spend more time communicating virtually than we ever had in the past. Our business has been built by relationships, and those relationships are usually built on trust and feeling, sitting in front of somebody. We don't have that opportunity anymore, at least right now. And for the foreseeable future, it's going to be different. And so for bringing on new business, we've got to find different ways to market. We've got to find different ways to connect. And all of our businesses moved to e-signature, so it's contactless. So I should say the majority has. And so our new future is, how do you connect and make someone feel comfortable sharing things that they normally don't share with everyone else virtually? And then analyzing some of the plans, because a unfortunately, there are a lot of group disability plans and group benefits in general that have pandemic riders. And so we have a lot of people reviewing care stuff to make sure that pandemic is not a rider in their policy when somebody places claims.
Yeah, chime in, Julie.
We are in the process of, to Jim's point, as we get back to business, and we definitely need to do that, but we need to do it in a thoughtful way. There's that healthcare concern with that, but there's really also the fact that businesses aren't prepared to be different. So we're putting a program in place for all of our consultants, but particularly our HR consultants, to support our clients and prospects with re-onboarding, bringing people back and looking at how they work differently together. How do they, you know, what kind of cultural implications are there for the organization? What kind of policies and procedures need to be reviewed in order to make sure that beyond safety, that the organization and business is successful? So we're reimagining what returning to work needs to be so that businesses can thrive quickly, not just stumble in a new reality that's so complex for some businesses in particular. So we are in the process.
You know, I'll add, you know, I was working with a fellow Rotarian looking at permanent space. We are in temporary space now. It's great. The space is location across the river from Manpower. But we were looking later this year to move into permanent space and looked at many different ones. And this has made us rethink our space needs. Since we are able to act virtually, how we create our office space and the size of that office space, I think will be one thing that has changed close to permanent.
Well, Richie, we have about two more minutes, so maybe one more question.
Sounds good. I think we just got one more in. What are some of the pandemic-induced business changes and behaviors that you want to keep when we return back to normal?
I think if your partnerships are not communicating with you now, I think we've all touched on the fact that it's important to communicate, it's important to be proactive. I think the heightened awareness and ability to communicate in times that are difficult is something that will be good for every business. We've all learned how to think about each other and connect with each other in a way that we haven't been able to in the past.
Along the lines of what Shep said earlier, our business was very much travel to the customer, sit down with them, figure out how to improve their process and so forth and so on. And we haven't been able to do that now for almost 2 months. We need to take advantage of the technology that exists now. And I think our customers have probably been trained to receive that technology, basically. And we could cover a lot more ground, a lot more opportunities if we did it using technology like Zoom. And I think they'd accept that.
I agree. Anyone else want to chime in? Or Mary, we could wrap this up now.
Richie, I would say that, given the fact that we all have so much more time on our hands, right? I find myself no longer traveling in the car for 2 hours a day. So having that additional time allows us to be more intentional about how we spend it, and be a bit more retrospective on, you know, is it necessary for me, as an example, to get out to meetings in all four corners of four different counties in one day? And so in many ways, if you're a small business owner, you know, you have to be purposeful about how you spend your time. And again, there's a lot of added benefits to not burning fuel, and just being able to condense that time to yourself and spend it in a more linear way.
Absolutely.
It's time for our virtual applause I think if we can all imagine.
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah.
We still got 66 people on board.
Oh, wow.
Solid program.
Great. Terrific.
Thank you, everyone who stayed on.
Thanks, everybody. Good luck to everybody as well.
Thank you for a very well done panel, all seven of you, Richie, Jim, Todd, Mark, Darren, Michael Shepherd, and Julie. I think we're very lucky in this club to have six or seven such strong business leaders to address us kind of in an ad hoc situation and give us their insights.